chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Cyril Deramo on the show today. Cyril is an ocean navigator, explorer, and adventurer, and a 2-time Guinness World Record holder. Well, Cyril, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so excited to have you on the show today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for the invite.
I cannot wait for our listeners to get to hear your story. You are an absolutely amazing human being. You are an amazing human being.
I don't know about that.
Well, you are. And thank you to our mutual friend, Dan Roberts, for connecting us. I'm really grateful to him because I think he heard you speak at a conference, at an IT conference. We'll maybe talk about that a little bit because you said there's a lot of parallels between what you do and even AI. And he came back and said, Lisa, oh my goodness, you have to have Cyril on the podcast. And then you and I spoke and I said, you are correct. I do need to have you on there. But a little bit about Cyril, you're an extreme kayaker, a 2-time world record holder. We're going to talk a lot about that. You're an athlete, motivational speaker, coach. You call yourself, you speak 6 languages fluently. I mean, I do good to master English, Cyril. I'm so impressed. We actually went to Italy and Greece for 3 weeks in June and then the beginning of July. And I did master just a couple of Italian words, but I can't imagine speaking 6 languages fluently. You also call yourself a citizen of the world. But I want to just read a couple quotes here because I really want our listeners just sitting on the edge of their seats. A few quotes about what people say about you, Cyril. Here's one. Cyril's enthusiasm is infectious. Cyril's infectiously positive go-get attitude will change your outlook on life. That's pretty amazing. You talk to him for 15 minutes and you're going to be inspired to get outside, try something new, or embark on a journey that you did not think was possible. Here's another one. Cyril's adventure is much more than just about a paddling trip. As groundbreaking as it was, Cyril has tapped into a higher plane in life in so many ways. Here's another one. One more. Cyril shows me what it means to love life. He doesn't do things because they're easy, but because they are hard. He's a pathfinder to happiness on a mission to share his discoveries with the world. He may do extraordinary things. I love this. He may do extraordinary things, but he's just an ordinary guy. And that fact helps me appreciate what is so extraordinary in my own life.
So I love it. Where'd you find all these?
I've got some good research help, but I loved that, you know, because for the most part, we're just all ordinary people.
Of course.
I think what you've shown people is that you can really accomplish extraordinary things, and I know a lot of it is mindset, and we're going to talk a lot about that, but There's so much I want to talk about, but before we get into all that, I would love for you to kind of take me back a little bit to your childhood, because I know you were born in France, mm-hmm. right? So take me back. What I really want to know, did this passion for adventure start when you were a little boy? I want to know what you liked to do when you were a little boy.
So I was born in north of France, a town called Lille, very close to Belgium. So tip top of the French map. Very simple background. Like really, it's almost a countryside because that little village was 5,000 inhabitants. So Saint-Gain-en-Mélantois, little town and a five child family. And I would say, you know, just really easy growing up, going biking to school, you know, knowing everybody in the village. So nothing very adventurous. And I guess maybe the adventure came because of that, because I thought until 18, well, it was pretty, not boring, but pretty simple. I wanted to discover the world. So I usually call that period of time as my roots. Right? That's my mm-hmm. anchor. That's my strength. I was very lucky to have very strong parents that loved me very much. We're part of a five-child family. And at 18, I discovered my wings. And one started to say, hey, there's the rest of the world I want to see. And you know, I started to go overseas and travel, and there was no going back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because the roots really did give you the freedom then to spread your wings, I think, because you were so firmly rooted in values mm-hmm. and that family unit and love, right? Oh, we could probably do a whole podcast on that, Cyril.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. I think it's... It just gave me the possibility to fail, right? Mm-hmm. You could mm-hmm. go, you could always come back.
Right? Yeah.
So when you're young, I think between 18 and 25, that's when you have to try new things. You have to mm-hmm. follow your heart, follow your passion, and see where it leads. I think sometimes at that age, we're already in the wheel where, hey, I've got to go to university. I've got to do this. I've got to do... You know, and once university, then you have to buy your first car. And your first car, you got to get engaged. And then you buy your first house. You're already in the wheel of whatever society puts on you. So between 18 to 25, I think that's where you find yourself and what you love to do. And so at 18, I got my 12th grade graduation. And before I started university, I was not very mature. And my parents said, okay, well, how about you do a year overseas? And you know where I ended up? I ended up being an exchange student in Arkansas. So
Arkansas,
yes. So I arrived and I was playing American football because I played soccer all my life. So I was a kicker. And that year was key. I was in a host family. And I discovered that I loved to be in an environment that was not unfriendly, but that was different, right? Where the language was different, the culture was different, the people was different. And I just loved that. And I said, okay, that's what I want to do. So I did international studies. And when I did my master's degree, it was international business. And I was in three different countries. I started in France, and then I went to England, Oxford, England for a year. I went to Madrid, Spain for a year, and then Paris for a year. And after that, it was like, that's why I call myself a citizen of the world. I wanted to keep traveling. So I actually did 2 years in Italy, in Milan, my first job working for the car company Peugeot. And after that, I wasn't ready just yet to go into, you know, working full time. So I said, I've got this itch to go and travel the world. So I was 25, and with $7,000, I went around the world backpacking for 1 year. You know, I just had this passion. Like I wanted to live life before mm-hmm. being into that rat's wheel, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that changed again my life. So I think the first year in Arkansas was key for me. The second year, that trip around the world, I came back with a different way of what it means to feel alive, what it means to live life, you know, and a little bit of more of a rebel. I guess all French people are a bit of rebels in some way, one shape or another. And I said, okay, well, I want to keep traveling. So then I moved to Brazil for 6 months because I loved the country, I loved the culture, and I was teaching English there. You know, I was never really motivated by money ever. It was just like, where do I really want to go now? What do I want to do? And after that, I wanted to do like work in something where there was quality products. So I got into the wine business, and I moved to Argentina. I lived there for 2 years in Mendoza. I opened a subsidiary for a French company doing oak barrels, you know, the oak barrels that are made by
Yes.
hand to age the wine. So I did that. I got into the wine business and so on and so on. You know, you see a little pattern where what am I excited to do? That was my motivation to taking the decision I did.
That is so, I love that. There's so much wisdom in that because you're right. Sometimes we just follow this. Okay, this is what the world expects you to do. This is what society expects you to do. But I think for you, I mean, it was more like, no, the world is my oyster. It's what I make of it. And, you know, going from one thing to the other, I'm sure Cyril has led, you know, it's like a stepping stone. Right? Everything that you've done has been a stepping stone to the next thing, because that wine business took you to California.
Yes, I
So
moved to
let's start
California.
there. You moved there. And then I think you like stumbled on, you were reading something and you saw the Great Pacific Race was advertised. And I love this. It said, you don't need to be a rower to row an ocean.
Okay, so let me take a little step back. Until I moved to California, I had never kayaked. I was 32 years old the first time I went to a kayak. Okay, until then, it was just soccer. In fact, if you think of the countries I've been to, it's all soccer. England, Spain, Italy, obviously France, but Brazil, Argentina, soccer was around the world. I was, you know, in Africa, I would play soccer in the park in Southeast Asia. So I had never kayaked before. So I arrived in California, and a friend of mine from Fiji says, "Hey, why don't you come and canoe with us? There's this canoe, it's called the Polynesian canoe, and from the islands, so you know, Hawaii, Tahiti." And I started canoeing then. I was 32 years old. And little by little, I guess, you know, the American spirit of why not? Why not you? Why don't you try this? You know, the American dream of you believe you can do anything you want
Yes.
just inspired me. And from one race to another, I started to do a longer race, 400 miles in Canada, the Yukon River Quest in a canoe. So it's 50 hours nonstop. Only there's two stops of 7. But I was like, what? How can I get there? And until I found this website called the Great Pacific Race, that you don't have to be a rower. So let me give the distinction between the three disciplines. First is canoe. So where you have a paddle, you paddle on one side and then you switch side. Then there's this kayak. Kayak is a double blade. You go right, left, and you go forward. Rowing, you go oars. With oars, you go backward and you use it. There are three different disciplines, right? So it's like in a band, you have three types of guitar. They're the same guitar, but different guitars, right? So I was not a rower when I started rowing and say I could row across an ocean with that team. And the Guinness record was 42 days at the time. And I guess I'm a little bit competitive as well. So I said, if I'm going to do this once in my life, I want to beat the record. So we got a team.
It before, which is just crazy to me.
So the team was made of four nationalities. I was a French guy. I've got a friend from Brazil, Thiago, who came in. There was Carlo from the US, from California. And there was Fionn from Iceland. And the four of us wanted the same thing, is try to get to Hawaii from California, crossing the mid-Pacific in the fastest way. And we did that in 2012. So 39 days, got there. I was like, what an adventure.
You broke the world record. Now, has anybody broken that record since, Cyril?
Yeah, so
Oh.
there's different categories. In our category, no one's beat it, but
Okay.
there's people that have been on a rowing boat with four men with a more advanced boat that have been faster than us. But in our category, no. But you know, this is just the cherry on the cake. What is the most important is the experience of life, of being in the middle of the ocean, 360 degrees of ocean. You don't see land for 40 days. You're with friends and you push yourself. You're there for each other. This is what it's really all about, right? Feeling the contact with the environment, with nature, the storms and the calm seas and the birds. And that's what I loved. It's really the adventure side.
Yeah, it's the journey, right? It's the journey, not the destination, really, you know? So, and we're going to talk about that because I love like your philosophy on life. You're this extreme kayaker, athlete, Cyril, but you're also a philosopher. And we're going to talk a lot about that. But okay, so then fast forward. So that was 2012. In 2022, you took another adventure.
Actually, let me take that back. It's wrong. I wanted to do the crossing in 2012, then I couldn't find the money. So from 2014, I actually did it in 2016. I apologize. Yeah, 2016.
2016. Okay. So, but in 2022, you took another adventure, and this time you did a solo kayaking adventure. And I laughingly, we were kind of talking in a sidebar conversation because we're going to talk about something you're doing in the future. I said, well, how long do you think it'll take you? And you told me, and I said, wow, I mean, you're going to finish it, you know, in less time. And you go, yeah, but just think, I got the first one wrong. So yeah. You did, you solo kayaked across the Pacific Ocean, and it took you 91 days. I got to know, I mean, Cyril, how in the world did you mentally and physically prepare for that? I got lots of questions around this because I know you sat in that kayak for 91 days. I mean, how did you mentally and physically prepare for this?
Right. So just to give a perspective to your listeners, there's been the rowing crossing that I did. It's part of 800. There's been 800 crossing of oceans in rowing boats, of which 230 solo. In kayak, the boat is much smaller because you have to be able to paddle on each side. Yeah, right. The cabin is much smaller. The boat is narrower. It rocks and rolls all the time. So not a lot of people have done that before. There were only three people before me. I was number four to do it fully human powered. So what I thought is, first, when I finished my rowing crossing, I said, never again. Like, this is too hard. this is ridiculous. Because you row 2 hours, you stop 2 hours. You row 2 hours. All day, all night, right? So going from a team of four to solo, that's a big, big jump as well, because there's nobody to rest, to tell you when to rest, or the mental side, the emotional side, all right? So I did 91 days from California to Hawaii, the same exact crossing I did, but that time alone on this little kayak. And I think the alone part is the hardest. And your question to how do you train mentally was probably the biggest hurdle before I left. I'm an extrovert person. I love people. I charge my batteries by meeting people. So I'm not gonna see land in 3 months. I'm not gonna see human being. I'm not gonna walk for 3 months. How am I gonna do with this? And that was really all the questions I had to prepare. Like, okay, what's physically, how do you do to prepare for kayaking 12 hours a day, every day for 3 months? And not sleeping more than an hour at a time, because I had to wake up to look for container ships on the plotter and see my GPS if the container ship was coming, look at the weather and the stress level. And I think where the mental side, that's where the philosophy kind of starts to come. What is your outlook on life in general that makes it bearable? You know, and I think it's really linked to your personality. Everybody can cross an ocean, and I really believe this. Any personality, if you're extrovert, very emotional like me, or if you're like a warrior, or you want to go to war against the ocean, you could do that too. All you have to know is really what are your positive attributes that could also be defects. You know, for instance, I'm very emotional, and that's my strength, right? When I see the rain, I could say, this is beautiful. The rain is coming. I love it. Thank you for refreshing me. I feel so salty. I love this. So it's a way, the mental side, I use my emotions to change the reality so that it's bearable, it's actually enjoyable. While the emotion could all be a detriment, where I don't see land. I started things about my loved one, and then I started to cry. Maybe every day I was crying because, you know, it's just so emotional to be alone. So I had to pilot that same strength and weakness so that it would be my strength to cross. And self-awareness is the key.
Self-awareness. Woo! That is so good. That is so good. Well, let me ask you this. Physically, I'd said, Cyril, my goodness, how in the world did you stay fit? You know, I would think that your muscles would atrophy, you know, after that many days and walking. I mean, how did that feel? And you told me you did kayak yoga. Well, my mother-in-law is 84, and she tells me all the time she does chair yoga. So I think it must be a thing, but you would do kayak yoga, you said. I want to know this. What did you what were some of the most challenging parts of the journey? Were there times where you were really scared? I mean, was there like a storm that really scared you? Or, you know what I think? I love the water. I love the water. I don't like what's in the water because my husband and son have watched too many shark movies. I would be scared of the sharks. I mean, was there a time where you were really afraid?
Of course. Yeah. You're so tiny. The ocean is so strong, so powerful. Yes. So you have to be humble. You have to be, I think humble is a way where that you have to say, okay, I'm tiny. I'm nothing. And that's where the philosophy starts to come in too, right? My life is really nothing. I'm just passing through. The storms are scary. I actually did the first attempt in 2022 where I didn't cross. After a week, I had to be rescued. In 2021, that was. I had to be rescued by the Coast Guard after a week. I was in a storm. Was there 35 knots of wind? It's really strong wind and big waves. And for 3 days, I was in my cabin attached here, strapped on the torso and the hips. And I just, for 3 days, I couldn't move. I couldn't go out even to paddle because I was just drifting. It was too dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that's where the mental side is pretty important to be. Okay, so to train, I did some meditation. I did Zazen meditation. I did some hypnosis sessions. I did just about anything. I would, I believe really the beginner's mind where you could try anything to see what works. There's not a lot of people could tell you this is what works, because like I said earlier, everybody's different.
Yes.
You just have to find and try new things. But it's not stormy all the time. 90 days, that's 3 months. Maybe there's going to be 3 days with 25 knots of wind and miles per hour, nautical miles per hour wind. Maybe there's going to be 3-4 days with 8 miles per hour. And that calm is actually hard as well because you're not moving, The best would be for me between 12 to 18 miles per hour wind. So the waves kind of create a little bit of momentum and I can do good mileage. 3 months is a long time. And your mind could go like,
I would imagine. Speaking of which, that trip was 2,400 nautical miles, just for our listeners. I've got to ask you this, though. When you reached Hilo Bay after 91 days, what was your feeling? Was it, and what did you do? I'm thinking to myself, I would go kiss the ground. Yeah. I would go, did you do? What was the first thing you did?
I think when the happiest moment of the crossing is the day before when I saw land and I knew I was going to land the day after. It's very happy because that's what, the finish of the journey is going to be, right? I said, I knew it. And that was key. Those three words meant that the vision and the ambition that I had, that a lot of people didn't believe I could do, were actually true, right? So that's months of preparation, years of thinking that I could do it. And when you look at me, I'm not physically strong. I'm a jack of all trades. I'm not an expert in anything. I could do a little bit of electricity, a little bit of in the boat, a little bit of navigation, survival, workout, obviously. But I'm not the guy who says, this guy's an adventurer. Man, he's going to climb mountains and go around. No, I'm a regular guy, like I said. So
right.
That I knew it. But at the same time, excuse me. At the same time, it was a bittersweet moment because then my adventure would end. And those 90 days were so full of teachable moments that, obviously I was happy to hug, the family and the friends that had come to be there in Hilo in Hawaii and wait for me. That's all I wanted to do is touch land and eat a warm meal and then take a hot shower and sleep in the dry sheets, Yes. And a soft pillow, that's all I wanted, But at the same time, it's hard to understand because my adventure would end. That's a bittersweet feeling for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a perfect segue because now you're getting ready to do another adventure. So that adventure ended and now you're looking at doing another adventure. And, you're going to be doing the Atlantic expedition. I think that's happening in December. But what inspired you? I guess it's just that feeling of you know, what is next, right? I mean, is there something specifically that inspired you to do this particular expedition?
Right. So after an expedition, and there's a lot of similarities when you go in a big, big project and that project ends, there's a little bit of a blues. You have a feeling of a blues where, you know, post-distress. It's not, I wasn't really depressed or anything, but there's a distress moment where like, what am I doing now? What's my life? You know, going back to the regular life? I don't know. So I knew I didn't want to rebound right away and finding another adventure. I gave myself like 2-3 months just to think about it, you know, learn from what I could learn from that expedition and kind of look at it from a little bit farther. And it was quite natural to think like, okay, I really loved it. I think in 3 months, I learned so much. You know, my friend Steve from Canada just says it very well. It says, Cyril, you were 45 years old, right? So that crossing that took 3 months felt like forever. It felt so long, right? But when you look at it, 3 months as a scale of your 45 years is really nothing. But these 3 months taught you so much that you're going to change the way you see life for the next 45 years of your life. So, and it's true, it was such an intensity of feeling alive that naturally I said, okay, well, I'd like to do that again, maybe in a different capacity. I want to use the same boat because I know her inside out. My kayak is called Valentine per my sister. We're 4 boys and a girl, so it's the name of my sister, Valentine. And so I refurbished her, I improved her, I changed the steering lines, I changed the batteries, I changed the salt, stuff like that. And now she's ready, and I thought, okay, well, I don't want to do exactly the same one. I'd like to do another ocean. There's not a kayaker that has done 2 different oceans, so I want to do the Atlantic Ocean, you know, so it'll be east to west, starting from the Canary Islands of Africa and going west along the equator line pretty much towards the Caribbean. And I want to finish in Martinique, which is a French island. So that's starting December, I will be taking off from there.
Yes. I love that. Well, gosh, we've got so much more. I think that's 2,800 nautical miles is what I read. So
it's a bit longer. Yes.
It's a little bit longer, right? But you're expecting to do it, what, you think in about 70 days, something like that?
Yeah, 70, 75 days. The currents and the wind is a little bit more established. Now, starting from an island compared to starting from the mainland or the continent is actually a bit easier because the trade winds are established. What was really hard is leaving from California. The winds are naturally pushing me towards the south. So if I didn't do anything, I would end up in Mexico. So these starting from an island, the wind is already blowing in my back and it will help me, you know, push and create the waves that are actually helping me going forward faster. So we'll see. Like I said, I was wrong the first time, so I might be wrong and finish in 90 days, but we'll see.
Well, we can't wait. We cannot wait to follow your adventure. Cyril, I have a lot more. In our second half, I want to talk a little bit more philosophy. We'll be right back with Cyril Deramo on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Cyril. And we have just been having so much fun talking. But the second half, we really love to talk a little bit more about philosophy, because as you heard Cyril in the first half, he's spending 90 days, 3 months on the water by himself, lots of thinking, right? Lots of thinking about life and what's important. And I do know, Cyril, and I'd love for you to tell our listeners about this, but my first question was, Cyril, did you, when Cyril and I had spoke offline before the podcast, I said, did you take time every day to journal? And you said, oh, absolutely. I said, well, when is the book coming out? And I know that you're working on that, so we'll tell our listeners more about that. But you kind of said this in the beginning, but and you certainly have beautifully demonstrated this through the first half of the show, but you said one of the things that you say is the most important thing is not the adventure itself, but the learning that you gain from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's for me. Okay, you have to find what's your purpose in life, right? There's one thing that only you can do. And I think for me is the ability to go after my dreams, live and learn from them, and then after share them back. I think the second portion of sharing them back and maybe inspire people to follow their own dream is what maybe my purpose, right? So I've got, I love to share what I've done and the learnings that it gave me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I need, when on the Atlantic is coming in 3 months, I'm sharing how I train. I have nothing to gain really other than having somebody call me in 5 years and saying, Cyril, this video that you did, I love it. This is why I'm doing this, that, and the other. This is why, you know, it's like this little domino effect that is unknown. And then giving the positivity to the world is just so fantastic.
It's the most fulfilling thing you can do. Right, Cyril? I mean, yeah, so much more than yourself is when you see that something that you say or do inspires someone else to go for theirs. And, you know, I'm going to back up for a minute because as you're talking, I love that you said, you know, maybe inspire somebody else to follow their dream. I mean, I think inspiring people to dream. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, as children, we do that a lot. You know, we dream and we think, you know, you ask a child, you know, what do you want to be? Oh, I want to be a race car driver, or I want to be a whatever. And then at some point, it's kind of like you said before, we kind of get into what society expects of us. And I think we oftentimes stop dreaming. And so even inspiring people to maybe start dreaming again.
Yeah. I mean, there's the fact that people don't dare to dream. They probably have an idea in the back of the mind, but they quiet it down because, well, you got the mortgage to pay, you got a career to go after, you got the kids that are doing it. So, yeah, it's hard to listen to that dream and actually live with the sacrifice that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When I did my first trip around the world with $7,000, I was over my saving. You know, it's not probably, some people could say it's not very smart to go and spend that money. And, you know, when you could have your first down payment on an apartment and then start working, you have a master's degree in international business, you should start working. No, I wanted to discover the world. But so I think it's everybody dreams a little bit. I meet a lot of people that say, I wish I had done that. I really want to do this. It's been 10 years. I want to go to Argentina. 10 years. I want to leave in France or learn a language. 10 years I want to lose weight. 10 years I want to go up this mountain or down this river or whatever it is. I want to learn cooking or play the music. 10 years. Okay, well, when do you start? So you actually dream. You are. But why? What is it that makes you not do it? And that's a question. Why is it? Because you say, no, it's not me. But why not? Why not you and why not now? You know,
Yeah, that's good. It's just, we're not going to answer all the world's questions right now, but at least we can give our listeners some things to think about and ourselves some things to think about. Here's another quote of yours. Teamwork is the secret that makes common people achieve uncommon results.
Yeah, I think I totally am a common guy. I'm a regular. I played soccer until I was 32. Listen, what discipline is it that I started kayaking I was 32, and then I started to do something that nobody had done before 10 years later? This is crazy. This is crazy. No matter what it is, you know.
That it may be sinking. Crazy, but it sure is inspiring. It sure is inspiring because it gives everybody else, well, gosh, if he can do it, I could do that too, right? Not that, you know, people may not do that very thing, but whatever it is that you're dreaming about, you know, go do it, right? We're never promised. None of us are promised tomorrow. I love this. You say, embrace a never negativity attitude. I love that. I just think so much. And some of us, sometimes, I mean, let's be real. Sometimes we can get down or whatnot, and there can be circumstances around us that are just, they suck. Okay. Mm-hmm. for lack of a better way of putting it. But, you know, I just think having that positive attitude is so important in life. Just like you said, oh, it's raining. Oh, I love the rain. This is beautiful. Instead of going, oh, it's raining. You know, I mean, it's two different ways to live, isn't it, Cyril?
So here's how I say it. You know, we think, okay, obviously the mental side of the crossing was very important. Okay, how do you get mentally tough? Well, for me, it's not mental strength. Mental strength, what we think about is pure, okay, give me 10 push-ups and give me 10 more, but show me you're mentally strong that you could keep going. Well, that's not mental strength. I think for me, the mental strength is really should be called mental agility, mental flexibility, mental adaptiveness, mental positivity, where it's the ability to look at the situation in different light, in a different perspective, so it's bearable, right? The example of the rain. But we can control that. And the point that you made at the beginning, which is you can decide not to think negatively. You can decide. But you have to catch yourself. That self-awareness is, oh, I'm thinking negatively right now. And in my Kayak Valentine, I decided to do that, like not being pessimistic, not have any negativity, and that was a decision I had made. Every time I would catch myself thinking negatively, like this will never end, you know, it's just bad energy in the boat. Mm-hmm. And it actually comes from the Polynesian canoe. The Polynesian canoe, you're six people in the boat. And the boat originally was cut, it's a koa tree that was cut. And when you cut that tree, it's a life that you're killing, right? So you have to respect the vessel. And once you go canoeing on that boat, then you have to respect the boat, like it's a seventh person, so to speak. It's seven human beings. So to respect the boat, we have no negativity. We don't cuss at each other. We are respectful with each other. And it's practice. You know, every time we go on the boat, positive. Mm. And that's what I decided to do in my own boat. And then later in my own life as well. I'm trying. It's not easy.
Yes. Can you imagine how much better our world would be? If we subscribe to that philosophy of no negative attitude and, oh, wow. Well, what about this? I love this. The all in mindset, be all in. The only way to get there is forward.
Yeah. So the all in happened to me on my attempt, 400 nautical miles offshore. I had maybe already three weeks, 1 month paddling, and had problems with my steering lines, had problems with my batteries, problem, many things in the boat. And I had been already, you know, 400 nautical miles, which is good, but compared to 2,400, it's still a long way to go. So
yeah, that's right.
The decision was either I take left and I go to Los Angeles, I'll be there in a week and I can repair, or I go right and left or right, it's a simplistic way to look at it. But and then Hawaii is about 2,000 nautical miles there. It's about another 2 months, and I can fix anything that will go wrong. And that's when I call my second departure. The first departure was push the pier, and then say goodbye to the family. That's one push, and it's actually easy because I wanted to go. The second one was, I go towards doubt and uncertainty, and I'm going to fix everything that will come my way. I will adapt and adapt and adapt. Mm-hmm. And for that, you have to have the all in, where I'm all in. I'm okay. I'm okay to die in the pursuit of what I believe, you know, as an adventurer, feeling fully alive. So it's hard to get there. It's mm-hmm. but then it kind of changes your perspective in everything, you know. There's something grand that is happening once you decide to live for something you would be okay to die for.
That's powerful. Well, you kind of set me up again. Thank you for that. You didn't even know you set me up, but you said the essence of adventure, things rarely go as planned. You know, and I think about software, you know, we're a technology company, Cyril, mm-hmm. and on projects, sometimes they go perfectly smoothly, but most of the time there's some things along the way that you have to adapt. We subscribe. There's the software methodology called Agile, and that is the methodology that we subscribe to, is every 2 weeks there's what's called a sprint, you know, and you're looking, and then you can adapt a little bit rather than going for a year and then, oh, this is not really what we wanted. Well, it's much, much harder than to go back. So I was just thinking, you know, you said you have to adapt and execute. And I had watched a little video of you leaning into this change, leaning into this need, because you're Valentine. You're trying to get Valentine on this container. And you told me it was an inch. Like the Valentine's an inch too large.
Yeah. Well, the trailer it's on just doesn't fit in a 40-foot container. And this is just one example over 1,000 that happens all the time. And on the water, when I leave the shore, I've got everything to be able to adapt to anything that happens, right? Medical, I could have cut myself, break a bone, I could, you know, I have issues with my eyes and the ears and digestive system. So the medical side is there, the electronic and electric, my solar panels could break. What do I have as a backup? I'm going to have to make water. I have a water maker. What's the backup of that? If this doesn't work, how do I make water on a plan B? What's about communication on land? How about, physicality? What if I hurt my shoulder? How do I keep going? The plan A, B, and C is always good. You have to have a plan. You have to have a strategy. But the most important is your ability to adapt to the situation that is changing. And what I found was the most stressful was not an event that is problematic. If you have preemptively thought about the solution, that could be the plan B. It's actually easy to deal with. Okay, if this happens, I'm going to do this. All right, this happened, so I'm doing this. Now, the hardest is to adapt to something that you had not planned. And that's when you have to be creative. That's when you have to have your ability to adapt and be flexible. Okay, well, I didn't think about that. Okay, but this is a situation. I'm not changing that. How do I adapt? Mm-hmm. And adapt and execute. You know, I thought I was going to be able to sleep every 3 hours. No, you know, my body just doesn't sleep. I have to wake up every hour because there's too many containers. How do I adapt to this? The scenarios that are not preemptively thought about, and that's when I did a conversation, a conference for AI. That's what it is. How are you a trailblazer when you do something that hasn't been done before? The only way is to be ambitious, to risk, and then to adapt all the time. Because ambitious is because other people can't see what you see. So you have to have the ambition to go somewhere people haven't been. You have to be risky because people won't do something that is too risky, but that's because you are a little bit risky and that you go where people haven't been, that you can do what you do. And the third is adapting, because adapting is obvious, but is needed. Otherwise, you fail and you go back to the shore.
Yes. Yeah. Such great lesson for life. Yeah. And to the point where I cannot remember what it was, but it was going to be so expensive to have your Valentine shrink wrapped. Yeah. It's going to be really expensive. And you said, oh, no problem. I'll just shrink wrap it myself. And you went and got shrink wrapped it yourself. Well, let me ask you something. I mean, I know that you've got this great Atlantic expedition, but, you know, what is next for you after the Atlantic expedition? Have you thought for it? And I want you to, I'm hoping that book is coming out soon. Cyril, I'm not sure if the book is going to be released soon. And I'm also thinking there needs to be a documentary.
Yeah, so I've been filming everything for the last 4 years for my first attempt of the Pacific, the real crossing of the Pacific, and then the Atlantic. After that, you know, I'll give myself the option to change. What if I hurt myself? I'm already almost 48. What if my body says, okay, that's enough. You know, it's too hard on your body. But maybe the spirit of adventure will say, okay, maybe it's not going to be kayaking. It's going to be crossing Mongolia on a camel. Shoot, I'll do that, you know. Cross, even simple thing, like cross a length of California with a goat, I'll do it. You know, I'll give myself the option, but maybe I'll say, okay, I'd love to be on the ocean. Maybe I'd like to do another ocean. Maybe the Tasman Sea, across from Australia to New Zealand. I'd love to do that. There's another kayaker who's done it, who's very inspiring for me. His name is Scott Donaldson. I'd love to do what he's done, you know? So I'll see. But what I know is it's going to be about vibration. It's going to be about that thing that wakes me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, I want to do this. And I open a spreadsheet and I got plans and strategy and I'm doing this. And, you know, it makes you dream. That's what exciting to me. That's what exciting.
Well, and just I'm thinking a couple things. I'm thinking my brain is going crazy here, but I'm just thinking of that quote, and I can't remember who said this, but it's not the years in the life, it's life in the years. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, boy, you are cramming life in every one of those 48 years, Cyril, which is so beautiful to me. And then the other thing that I'm just thinking is the legacy and that ripple effect, the pebble on the water, because you have no idea how much what you're doing is going to impact other people to bring them alive and to awaken them, which I just think is so beautiful. But I have to ask you this. This is called Something Extra, and every guest gets to answer this, and I always love this question. But what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I would say self-awareness. I think I've mentioned it a few times. Self-awareness is key. You cannot adapt, you cannot change, you cannot do anything if you don't see your own behavior, how you react, and how your emotions are. So physically, mentally, emotionally, you have to be self-aware, and that's how you grow. As a leader, but as anybody in the world, I wish everybody were super, super aware of themselves, because that will bring self-esteem, that will bring growth, that will bring a change. Adaptedness to hardship. That self-awareness is something I think is very important.
That's fantastic. Well, this has been so much fun, Cyril. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show. And I cannot wait. I'm hoping that we'll get to see one another face to face here before you know it. But we'll be following you and following your adventure. Best of luck to you. And I just know that you're going to continue to inspire many, many, many with your life. So thank you for what you do.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, there'll be a map with a tracker every hour. So please, people, you know, go on the blog. There'll be on my social media. I'll be blogging every day about philosophy, life, love, adventure. So let's do this.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.